And if there's no objection, let's move directly into Finance Committee. Yes. Are there additions, corrections, or changes to the agenda?
Not the agenda. Did we add the...
Sure.
Do we have the bus?
I can't hear you, sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at the agenda. Is the canopy in this room?
The canopy actually is... I don't know that they're ready for it at this point.
Right.
They want to go directly to board meeting and...
Okay, that should be appropriate. Okay. So the agenda is fine.
Okay, then without objection, the agenda is approved. Minutes?
Mr. Chairman?
If we could have the people who want to have discussions go outside, that would be nice, please.
Mr. Chairman?
Minutes of November 6, 2008. It is in blue, which means there was a change. The change was the addition of Mr. Giancola to the committee members who were attending. And Ms. Hudgens, do you want to make an additional change?
Mr. Chairman, yes. And consistent with your diligence to minutes, I noted that under the capital financing plan, we talked about the future Metro commitments being 50-50-50, and I noted that that was inconsistent with where we are currently today. And I think that this should be noted in the minutes, and it was both myself and I think some other members that noted
also
that.
Did comment.
So I think the minutes are not reflective of the discussion that was had that day.
So you'd like to have a statement in there that showed that under the dedicated funding,
that's correct.
There was agreement to do 50% per jurisdiction, and that Virginia has raised the issue as to whether that is
not an agreement. Yeah. There had never been agreement, something which staff conceded to when the point was raised at the meeting.
That there is no agreement, that you believe there's no agreement for the 50-50.
I don't believe that that point had been challenged.
There has been no agreement today.
No, there was no discussion of it in the meeting. No discussion. I would note that there are people who believe other than the position that you took. So let's word it carefully.
I welcome a citation of any point at which a position had been taken reflective of that, unlike the one time when we are on record in 2005.
I think the point is that the minutes should reflect the discussion
as the issue
was
brought up. Yes, I agree. Are there any other additions, corrections, or changes to the minutes? With that change being included, and would you please circulate it to the members who asked for the change and myself also?
Yes, sir.
Before it's final, would the committee consider that be an acceptable solution? Then, without objection, as changed, the minutes are approved. First item is an action item to initiate advertisement of procurement for the 7,000 series rail cars. Mr. Kubitschek.
Yes.
This is also blue.
Yes. Good morning.
It's changed.
I would just like to note that we had our initial pre-brief with Mr. Benjamin. It was a simpler report. During the course of the mail-out process, there was the report that was released out to the board was a little bit in error. It was a little bit more cumbersome, and it wasn't as clear as concise as what we went over with Mr. Benjamin. So we do apologize for this late notice, but rest assured, what you have before you is a lot simpler than what you were originally issued. Okay. If we could, the purpose of this is at this stage is that we are looking to request committee recommendation for board approval to add the options to the procurement of up to 684 rail cars to the current approved 64 rail cars for Dulles. And again, we'd also like to stress throughout this process that all of these options that we're talking about are subject to board approval, the prioritization process, and availability of funds. Okay, this is a slide that we've provided before. This is really what constitutes this, the 748 rail cars, and it gives a breakdown of the options and how we'll go about working this. Next slide, please. This is a slide that we have provided as well previously. It kind of gives a global view, an outline where we see where we're going to have stacking of activities and also to be able to forecast a long-range plan. Next slide, please. Okay. At this stage, we are, you know, we're requesting the committee to allow us to add options for this procurement. And again, all of our options are subject to the prioritization and availability of funds.
That it?
Yes, sir.
So could I clarify just so that we all know what it is we're voting on? What you're asking us to do, you're not asking us to commit any additional funds in any way.
No.
All you're asking to do is to authorize that you go out to bid. This is the initiate but not award. And that the base for the bid is the 64 rail cars for Dulles, which have already been approved.
Yes, sir.
And that we also authorize options as shown and as have been discussed actually in another committee and in this committee, that we would then get bids back, but before we would do anything about any of the options, we would come back to the board to say, is money available and should we do this? And we'll also come back to the board for any award. So approving any of those options is subject to the prioritization that we're going to be doing in the capital program.
Yes.
And to specific board action on each option.
Yes, sir.
All you're doing now is you're asking to go out and advertise for the full set with all of those options, which, if all of them were done, would be close to $2 billion.
Yes, sir.
But we don't say that any of that money is here now.
That is correct.
Okay. Initiate, but not.
Mr. Chairman, do you need a motion?
I'm sorry?
You need a motion.
Are there any? Let me just see.
There should be a resolution.
There is no resolution for some reason.
But there is no resolution.
I think I found the answer to that.
Good.
I asked. My understanding is now the resolution was there originally because they were proposing to amend the budget effectively.
Right.
They now realize that's not an appropriate action. And so this is simply a contract action, basically. It's just getting us to direct them to, in the procurement order, to negotiate these options we're talking about. And that's all that's being done in their option.
So if we go to
therefore, there's not a resolution.
So if we go to page 6, the resolution from 2007 is the action that was taken. And so only thing we're adding is informational item here, that we're moving forward with the options that are described.
I think it's more than an information item.
Well,
we are authorizing them to move ahead with the options, but with no funding for those options. Is that correct?
Yes.
But Mr. Chairman, I should think we'd want to have some kind of a stated motion, though, because this is an action item.
It is a motion.
Well, what is the motion?
The motion is to go ahead and initiate the procurement based upon the resolution of 07 with the options that are described, with the clarification that there are no funding agreements here.
Well, yeah, I think there is a motion. There is no resolution.
Right. But I'd like to see the motion in writing.
Okay. I could state it.
Page 6 is if you want to take the recommendation, it becomes a motion authorizing the addition.
To add to phase 1, Dulles Carter Metro Rail Procurement of 64 rail cars. A, an option for the Dulles Phase 2 rail car requirements of 64 cars. Then B, options for up to 620 rail cars to renew the oldest portion of the Wada fleet, rehabilitate the 100 rate of 4,000 series rail cars, and satisfy future metro ridership objections. I think that's Ms. Hutchins' motion.
Ms. Hutchins, would you go ahead and formally move that at this point? You don't have to read it all.
I can read it again for you. But, right. Mr. Chairman, I so move the item in authorizing staff to go ahead. The appropriation for the 64 cars.
Procurement
for the 64 cars, and the options is described on page 6 of the item.
And is there a second?
Second.
So this is what you're moving is the precise language.
That's exactly right.
Under recommendation.
Right.
Correct. Any other questions?
No.
Ready for a vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Mr. Kubitschek.
Thank you.
Our second item. This is the Roslyn Station Access Improvements Project. Ms. Kissel, or do you want to go ahead and move this?
I'm prepared to move approval, Mr. Chairman, as staff has recommended.
Is there a second?
Second.
Just to clarify, this is a project that is fully funded by Arlington County.
We're paying for it.
And what this does, actually, it's slightly different from what we normally do, if I read it correctly, and that is that not only does it approve funding that is currently available, but says that if Arlington comes up with additional funding, wants to do more, we are in advance saying that's okay also on this project. Is that?
Yes.
Right. Any questions on this one? It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? There are no noes. Information item, Metro Access Ridership and Cost Projections, Mr. Kent.
Good morning. As we prepare for the presentation of next year's budget, we would like to provide the board with an update on paratransit ridership and its associated costs. There's quite a bit of information in the presentation, but I wanted to begin with just a quick statement of really what I'm trying to accomplish in presenting this information item. First, just an acknowledgement that the paratransit growth is outpacing bus and rail considerably. That service improvements to the paratransit program are feeding that ridership increase, that the growth is now causing the paratransit line item to become an increasingly larger portion of the operating budget, that we are taking affirmative steps to manage the demand, certainly more so than we have in the past, and finally, that we will be coming back to the board later, specifically the general manager will be presenting some options, some policy considerations as you are reviewing the upcoming budget for FY10. First, this is a 10-year history of the ridership on Metro Access, and as you can see, considerable growth, over 556% increase in ridership over that same time span. But the good news about that is over that same period, that on-time performance on the system has greatly improved. And since the inception of the new paratransit contract, the on-time performance is validated by GPS data. So we actually have some validity to this data that we can really prove through our GPS system. The on-time performance is defined as an on-time arrival within the 30-minute pickup window. More specifically, the ridership increased between FY07 and FY08 by a factor of 16%, and the trend is even larger now. It's at 20% increase between 08 and the first quarter of FY09. What we had done to project how this growth trend was going to look over the next 5 years was to bring in HLB Decision Economics to do an actuarial analysis on paratransit ridership. They took into consideration a few things. They took into consideration the historical data that we have on paratransit ridership, but also some proposed demand management techniques that we will be employing, as well as the potential impact of door-to-door service on the attractiveness of Metro Access to customers and how that might factor into growth. So what you see in this slide is the FY07 actual ridership in the lower left. And then the FY08 ridership, there are two numbers there. The actuarial analysis provides a range of ridership projections by year, a lower, central, and upper forecast. And in the first year of the study, the actual ridership was slightly higher than the upper forecast. Typically, budget decisions and recommendations are made on the central forecast because this scientific data has an 80% confidence interval on the central forecast. And usually what happens is, and as you can see on this graph, the rate of growth actually decreases and levels off as you get to the out years. And that is, of course, attributable to the increased efforts on our part to manage the demand. But what you're seeing here are, according to the actuary, three potential outcomes, and that depending on the relative success of our demand management efforts in making the bus and rail system a more well-advertised and well-used option for people with disabilities, there's growth in all three scenarios, but the third scenario is a softer growth curve than if we were not to take those measures into account. there are a number of factors that are affecting the increases in ridership, and again, I want to thank the board for all of the support you've given the program in recent years to supply the fleet with sufficient vehicles to meet the demand and the resources that were given to increase the size of staffing, both on the contract and for contract oversight. Those have had a very positive effect on service quality, but it's also given customers greater confidence in using the service and increase eligibility applications. 1,000 per month are continuing to come in. Also, we've made some technology enhancements and, of course, the successful door-to-door implementation this past June.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Ewell.
With regards to the door-to-door service, you know, we're, my jurisdiction is questioning, first of all, we certainly, you know, support Metro Access, and despite the challenges we've encountered over the past 6, 7, 8, 9 years, certainly some improvement and still room for greater improvement. But the question we have is that the door-to-door service certainly is and the time it takes to wait for the customer, the client, is an added cost. And is there going to be a study, or has there been a study comparing you know, the real benefit of this door-to-door service?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question, Mayor Ewell, because that was a concern from the beginning. When the ad hoc committee of the board was considering the switch to door-to-door service, we were asked to do a cost-benefit analysis of that at the time. And our consultant had indicated that because of the fact that the boarding process actually is shorter, because the driver's not passively waiting for the customer, that the impact on what we could call dwell time at a particular bus stop would be, or a particular destination would be negligible. And I have to say that our preliminary analysis of door-to-door indicates that that has turned out to be true, that the dwell time has not appreciably increased, and that we've actually seen a slight improvement in efficiency. So if there is any indirect correlation of cost to door-to-door service, it would simply be that it's another factor that's made the service more effective and that more people are interested in using it.
Oh, and I appreciate your answer, and albeit while the service has improved, certainly the cost exponentially will continue to increase as a result of the increase in ridership and demand for the service. But Metro should, and I'm sure my colleagues can appreciate this, certainly should be cognizant of the fact that as this service has continued to expand and cost the system, and as the need and the commitment we've already made to purchasing additional buses and so forth is, it's a cost, it's a driving cost factor that at some point is going to be prohibitive, particularly in terms of member jurisdictions, because we're facing some tremendous budgetary limitations right now, and we can't be expected to step up to the plate and increase our subsidies. So I think it behooves all of us to just keep in mind that despite the success of this growing program, we can't let it get out of control to, you know, in terms of the overall picture of providing a holistic service, simply because we're going to get to the point where something's going to have to give, and right now it looks like what's going to give is that member jurisdictions aren't going to be able to even, not so much increase subsidies, we may be at a point where we can't even make out subsidy payments. That's how dire things are right now, so just wanted to make that note.
Well, one of the motivations for coming to you with this presentation was to provide some detail on some of the things we can do about those costs, which I'll allude to in a few minutes. Economic conditions also are a factor, just like they are in bus and rail, that more people are choosing public transit options generally. And of course, the one thing about paratransit is that because it is an ADA service, we're not able to deny service to anyone who approaches us to use it, provided that they are eligible under the criteria. This is the current financial picture. In FY 2008, our budget was $59.8 million. There was a cost overrun, which we again attribute directly to the increased volume. The same thing is happening currently in FY 2009. The rate of increase is proving to be even higher. But the one thing I really did want to point out was that the average cost per trip has been consistent. So what that tells me is that this is directly attributable to volume and not some issue of efficiency or some other factor, but rather that this is a proportional increase that is causing the upward movement in ridership and cost.
May I stop you at that point, Mr. Kent? Because I was looking at the figures that we're going to get in a minute or two from the budget people on our financials. And it looked as though the budget for this year assumed a 16% increase in ridership. And we're getting about a 20% increase in ridership, so we're 4 or 5% above where we were budgeted.
The ridership was solely the factor in FY08. In FY09, there was an underestimate in the budgeted amount for fixed costs. It was not a variance on ridership. So, you know, we have been, with the help of the actuarial study, been calling the ridership numbers fairly well. But in FY09, one of the reasons why the overrun has been a little greater is that there were some fixed costs that were not anticipated that were actual service enhancement carryovers from improvements we've made in prior years that needed to be factored in.
So contrary to what you just said, it is not proportional.
It's proportional for the variable cost for both years.
Because what we're looking at in just the service area, not looking at the overall budget, but just looking at what you're doing in services where you're paying the contractor is about 20 to 30% overrun with about a 4 to 5% ridership increase. And the question is, how are those parallel?
Well, our reports on ridership increase have been between 16 and 20%.
Of it's budgeted. Budgeted about 16.
Right.
So you're 5% over budget on ridership, 4 or 5%.
It was
and you're around 20 to 30% over on your services contract.
In FY09, there was an underestimate of some of the fixed costs that's made that more of a factor. But my objective here was to point out that the ridership growth has been appropriately budgeted and has been consistent with our projections. And that's why we wanted to have the conversation fairly early about the FY10 budget, just because obviously we're going to correct the underestimate for 09 on the fixed cost, but the ridership trend has been consistent.
You would have to have some very whopping fixed costs to be able to come up with the numbers that are reported so far this year.
We'll be providing more detail on that with our proposed FY 2010 budget. One additional point on that last slide was that Mr. Benjamin asked us at one point why the revenue was not increasing proportionally with the ridership that we'd been seeing. And the reason there is because as a result of the legal settlement that we completed, the customers are receiving a certain number of free rides. The entire population of eligible customers received 10 free rides as a result of the settlement, but we are also providing a free ride each time that there's been a late trip. And as a result of that, the box in the corner shows that if you add back the fares that were provided gratis as a result of the settlement, it does bring the average fare up back to $2.27, which is very close to the $2.30 that we had originally budgeted. So we wanted to just share that with you. The contract, as separate from the budget, has a certain amount of contracting authority that goes with it. It is an 8-year contract with 4 years in the base period and 2 2-year renewable options. We are now approaching the end of the base period, which ends on January 14th of 2010, and we wanted to advise the board that given the increased expense rate of the contract, that we will consume that authority, that contracting authority for the base period by the end of this fiscal year, but yet the performance period will extend to within the first 6 months of FY10. So at some point, we will be required to come back and seek your approval for additional contracting and authority, and of course this dollar amount will be factored into our proposed 10 budget for paratransit. Now, I mentioned earlier that there were some things that we can do and are doing about managing cost and demand, and these are just a few. Starting in April, we are directly providing fuel to our contractors' garages, and at the moment, we have already begun to realize substantial savings because we are no longer having to pay the federal and state excise taxes that the contractor would have to pay. So this has been an advantage to Metro. And of course also, because we're directly purchasing vehicles, I had mentioned this in a previous presentation, we're using state contracts, we're not paying any markups for the purchase of vehicles, and that model has put some money back on the bottom line. And then finally, we are seeking alternate properties in Metro's collection of real estate to see where we might be able to more strategically locate paratransit garages, because the reduction of deadhead distance is also a fuel savings. And there's one that we are preparing to implement very soon in Fairfax County that will reduce the average deadhead distance by up to 11 miles, and that's going to be a very important cost savings to Metro. Our plan of action from this point forward, and we've talked about this for a while, is to strengthen the eligibility certification process. And I do want to point out that this doesn't necessarily mean that it is a process to really make it more difficult for a person who truly needs paratransit to get the service, but rather that to those people who do have the ability to use bus and rail but may not realize just how accessible it is, that we will make a more concerted effort to travel train those individuals and to put information in their hands that will help them to make better use of those services. Travel training, oh, yes, ma'am.
Yes, sergeants.
Can you give us a breakdown on senior certifications versus others?
And well, seniors are not certified for Metro Access just because they're a senior. It has to be disability related, and specifically that it prevents them from using bus and rail.
I guess there is another part in that, and it's one that has come up in terms of the number of people who ride as a companion in many of those, and many times it is that population. And it would be an interesting part that we kind of look at those numbers and go to the point of your travel training piece, because Mr. Yule talked about the growth and the cost piece, and I think if there's any place that there's a opportunity to control some of the cost, is the ability for us region-wide to look at the opportunity of the travel training aspect, and many of those are seniors serving as companions
or
with persons
caregivers
with
or
different disabilities, and how do we work with that part?
That's an excellent point.
Mr. Solomon?
Just to follow up on Ms. Hutchison point, I mean, we had this discussion year more at the, I think Mr. Graham brought it up. Are we realizing any savings as a result of the companion program? And is it factored into any of these numbers that you're talking about?
It is. It is. This third point here, I'm pleased to say that calendar year to date that we have actually deferred 145,000 rides that could have been taken on Metro Access at our $38 per trip cost, and that yields a $5.5 million savings. And because of the fact that we have actively promoted the free ride program, the participation is actually up by 59% over the previous year. We really make a concerted effort to put information out about that through our outreach efforts, working with senior centers in the community, our website, literature, you know, it's, and now even more, it's even more highlighted in our eligibility process. So it actually, it really is helping a great deal, and we want to promote it even more.
So, but if I could follow up. So, but well, I'm pleased to hear that. Mm-hmm. You know, but even with these savings, this $5.5 million in savings, we're still seeing this very substantial increase in the cost of the program.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Mr. Graham, let me note that you didn't actually say that we saved all of that money. That's the amount of money that if all of those people had used.
It's an avoidance.
But it would have been added to the.
But for instance, if I'm interested in riding on rail, but I don't ever intend to use it, I could use this program and I would be part of that 5 million.
Yes, I understand that. But you have in your FY 08 actual was 1.7 million passenger trips. And what you're saying here, if I follow this correctly, on page 31, is that 145,000 passenger trips were taken during through the free ride program and reduced fare programs.
That's correct.
And those 145,000 would have been added to the 1.7 million.
That's correct. And also they
so
would have been in the projections for
10%. A little under 10%. But that is a very significant improvement over what we've had previously. So what do you attribute the improvement, just the education that we're doing about these issues?
Absolutely. We find from our outreach efforts and talking with customers who apply for paratransit that many of them don't realize that Metro really is the most accessible transit system in the nation. And as we put out all of the information that we have on our accessibility features and just how convenient it is, you know, most people are going to choose the most convenient option. And once they see that, then they're happy to use it.
How is the free ride physically manifested? What do we do to say, here's your free ride?
The customer presents their Metro Access ID to the station manager, and the station manager uses a smart trip card to let them through, and that captures the ridership data.
And that's how we have such good data.
That information is there are two ways. Also, people using the bus. Now, if they get on a bus, they do the same thing. They show their ID, and the driver presses a key on the fare box. We have made a more concerted effort with the rail station managers to say, please, when you let people through, absolutely use the smart card so we can capture the data. And the truth is that there may be an even higher number than the number I presented on rail if some of those customers went through the side gate. So we really emphasizing the need to capture that data.
But the point is that it's easy.
Yes. Very easy.
And we haven't had complaints about the difficulties of using the free ride.
We have not.
Fare system. That's good.
So finally, as I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, the general manager will be coming back and presenting in conjunction with his direction on the FY10 budget also some policy options to consider to further manage the demand and the cost of paratransit. And then finally, I just want to again mention that there will also need to be an action to increase the contracting authority through the end of the base period of the paratransit Great. Contract.
Are there any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Kent.
Thank you.
Which brings us to our last information item, which is our financials. Ms. Kissel.
Thank you very much. You have the package. That was delivered to you. I would like to indicate that we've actually included 2 months of financials, September and October. I'll take you through September. Oh, thank you. And then we can also look at the first quarter plus 1 month of October. But if you look at page 46, some of the highlights that we can address. Ridership continues to show an increasing trend in growth, specifically for bus. It's 8% over the prior year period. Metro Access, as you just heard from Mr. Kent, has grown to 20% ridership, and we're tracking that. In terms of revenue, total revenue is exactly as budgeted for the month of September. Although bus revenue is 7% more than budgeted, it's being offset by the Metro Access and rail and parking revenue. The expenses for the month are a bit unfavorable due to services, fuel, utilities, and fringe, which are the typical expenses that we have seen risen over this period, given some of the increases in fuel during that period. And we're tracking that, actually, as well as the increase in some benefit pension payments that we're experiencing, as well as everyone else. Overall, for the first quarter, if you look at just the first quarter results for Metro, We are on budget for total revenue. The increase in bus revenue is offset by the decrease in parking and Metro Access. And overall, for the first quarter expenses, they've increased by 2%, primarily due to these fuel and power increases. If you look at page 75, which
before you move in, you're moving to October now?
I'm moving actually to October and the year to date. So it would be the first quarter plus the month of October.
Let me just first see if there are any questions on the first quarter. The only notation I would make in this is that we're seeing a very unusual situation relative to budget. For years, bus ridership and revenue has been on or below budget, and it's suddenly substantially above budget. For years, rail ridership has been well above budget, and this year it's at or below, and revenue is below. It's highly unusual. Do you put that down to a reality and change in the kind of service we're providing, or the budget estimates we made, or what?
If we could I just take you to page 53 in your package? Actually, let me go to the October page, because I think we might just be having a base data issue that is skewing some results. Janice, I want to go to the line chart in the back for the bus page.
What page number?
In your packages, it's page 82. And just real quick, I want to draw your attention up on the screen. It's a little hard to see, but right there is last year's actual bus ridership data that came through the systems. And what we think is there was a data error in our tracking of ridership last year. And it's so the actual ridership count from last year is significantly below both budget and actual. So I think it's skewing these kind of results. If I compare this year's actual to last year's actual, it appears like there's a dramatic actual ridership increase. Same thing seemed to happen in July. Last year's actual was significantly below this year's actual. So it makes this year's ridership appear like it's grown dramatically. So I had 2 months where last year's base data, and we're looking into trying to figure out why that base data might be artificially low, it's making this year's growth rate appear dramatic. 2 months of August and October is the much more typical trend that we see, where there's about 1% growth year over year. In August, last year's actual, this year's actual, and budget, they're all the same number. This year's October, last year's October, and the budget for October, they're all about the same number. So what, just wrap it up, we're basically seeing 2 months of data that came through the ridership counts that don't seem to be consistent with what we've seen in the past.
So how does that explain revenues?
Yeah, revenues?
That does ridership, but not revenues. Why would we be getting so much more revenue than we budgeted?
That's the rail page, Janice. Mm-hmm. No, the other way.
There you go.
Here, what we're seeing on the revenue side, this is where we calculate average fare. There is always volatility in the revenue on bus. So we're seeing more revenue come through the system right now. It's not out of line with the kind of volatility we've seen in years gone by. So what I want to do is watch it for a couple of more months and see. I would expect within a month or two this line will come back down like this, because year in and year out there is always some ups and downs. What the blue line is what we budget, average fares, which turns into revenue. The actuals is the real cash and passes and revenue coming through the system.
Well, except that when we do paper transfer elimination, all bets are off, so your numbers won't match anymore.
All I can say is this line right here, which is generating a higher than expected revenue result, is inside the band of kind of normal volatility of how bus revenue comes through the systems here.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay. I mean, trend stuff, all right, too hard to tell and too hard to data, but in terms of a static comparison, it does appear like you've got financial numbers on bus at like 1% when you're showing ridership up 8%. it doesn't look like there's a correlation either here or across there between ridership and fares.
We agree. And this year there is volatility that's coming through these numbers that seems to be different than what we've experienced in the past.
I thought you were saying it's always highly volatile.
I'm saying the revenue that comes through kind of an accounting process, there's always some volatility in the recognition of bus revenue. So that is kind of normal volatility.
An accounting artifact?
Could be. And it goes to how the cash is collected from the bus garages, deposited at the Alexandria Revenue Collection Facility, counted and processed. So in addition to this kind of normal volatility on the revenue side, what I'm saying is on the ridership side, we've got additional volatility because last year's actual ridership count is so far below normal, what we would think is normal, it's almost hard to explain.
Might be bad data.
That's my point.
May I request, one of the things that you've done in this report compared to some previous reports is every report seems to have a little bit less data in the executive summary. It used to be some nice comparisons of prior year, this year, budget, and that's sort of disappeared. We're down to so little information in the executive summary that you got to go back here and try and puzzle out all the numbers. If you could bulk that back up again so that we can look at it.
We
and
can
say,
do that.
Oh, yeah, that's what's probably going on. That would be helpful.
We can do that.
Okay. Was there another question?
Okay, if you actually turn to page 75, we can go through the October as well as the year-to-date, so it would be the first quarter plus 1 month. You can see revenue has increased slightly again, the bus increase that we just discussed. It's being offset by Metro Access and parking revenue, in addition to other decreases. The parking revenue is a bit of a we've actually our utilization on parking structures is about 91% for the month of October. We actually have planned for 100% utilization, so that explains some of the offsets that we're seeing on the bus, on the parking revenue. The expenses for this period overall reduced by $1 million, and although we have unfavorable balances in supplies and fuel and fringe, it's being controlled by vacancy and some overtime management. I will also say that on the supplies increase that you see, the unfavorable balance, that will be reversed in the next period. It's a result of some train parts that we've actually procured and we've allocated to operating. That should be reversed and allocated to capital. So we should see that in the next month's financials. In addition, for your information, we've actually, as you know, implemented a fuel hedge program. We've hedged 25% of our fuel. We don't see it in this particular quarter, but you will see it in the ongoing quarters as we move forward. And as a result of fuel prices, we'll see that expense item go down a bit, maybe offset by utility increases, but fuel should go down quite a bit. Overall, for the period, for this period, the first quarter plus the month of October, we are under budget by 1%. Just to touch on the outstanding debt, our debt for the Metro is $554 million. We've reached our ceiling of borrowing capacity under our commercial paper and line of credit. Due to the credit markets, we're seeking ways to increase our capacity, on our debt capacity. So we'd be looking to actually increase that line of credit facility, and we'll bring that to the board at a future meeting. And as well as the plan that we have to take our short-term debt to a long-term debt, and as well, we will bring that to the board sometime next spring. And that's our report, if there's any other questions.
Any other questions?
No.
Everybody's glazed over by now? That's our last item. Unless there are any objections, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.